Hello and welcome to Talking Together, Learning Together, Growing Together with me, Ali McClure, and my special guest tonight, Ian Hunkin, educational psychologist and director of the South Central Teaching School Hub. Good evening and welcome, Ian.
Ali, evening to you too, and thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Tonight, we're going to be having a conversation which forms a sort of informal workshop. Primarily for parents, but it's designed to empower you. You lovely people who are listening, the adults around the children, with simple strategies to help you in talking together, learning together, and growing together with your children. Tonight we're talking about time out or time in. Oh my goodness, what a can of worms that is, Ian. How long have we got?
We'll make good use of it.
That's great. So thank you very much indeed for joining me, Ian. We have some common currency. We both have worked in teacher training, you still do, and
Yes,
I'm
yes.
privileged to work in a school where I get to work with new TAs, people who are new to teaching as well as experienced, and running courses too. So when people in schools, in early years settings, or in families are coming across children who are struggling with what seems to be behaviour. Is it the behaviour that's the biggest issue?
Gosh, that's a great question. I think it's really interesting, isn't it? I think we very often get caught on the specific behaviour that is presenting, and I think it's really important that we look behind and beyond that behaviour. One of the things we talked about before we started, Ellie, wasn't it, was kind of behaviour being communication, and if we can see that behaviour as communicating, in particular, one of the things I find most helpful around that is thinking about the need behind the behaviour. So I'll give you
Absolutely.
a quick example of that. If we are working with a child who is dysregulated and they're presenting as either highly anxious or highly angry, if we see that child as manipulative and controlling and trying to get their own, all those things, we're going to behave and respond to them very differently than if we can see the need behind that behaviour and realise that child with their anxiety or their anxious presenting behaviour probably is not feeling safe, is trying to control things because they don't feel safe or whatever. Therefore, our actions become what can we do to help that child to become safe, to become regulated, and ultimately to learn the skills to be able to self-regulate and manage some of those challenging behaviors for themselves. So how we look behind that behavior, the communication for that behavior, I think fundamentally changes how we then respond and hopefully respond
Absolutely.
productively and helpfully to that behavior.
You said a couple of things in there that
Yeah.
I'd like to sort of latch on to.
Please do.
One of them is if we think the child is trying to manipulate us, or that old-fashioned word, naughty,
Yes.
which I don't hear anymore, but I think is still in some circles, or that child's just being naughty, or they're particularly a naughty boy. If the child is behaving in that way, you mentioned that we may respond as the adults, we may respond differently.
Yes.
And I wonder if the way that we respond to them perhaps doesn't actually help them to behave any better.
Well, Ali, you're touching on some really important stuff there. And I think if I take it back to the title of the podcast, with that time out or time in, I think something that we are encouraged to use, and I'm choosing my words very carefully, as a society, as parents and as teachers, is this kind of idea of time out, the kind of naughty step or the time out. And actually, just to get into that quickly, for a child or young person to be able to successfully manage the use of time out and isolation effectively when they are dysregulated requires a significant level of social emotional skill maturity. We're talking about somebody being able to self-regulate, we're talking about somebody being able to problem solve. And actually, what we know from the psychology and the neuroscience is that we only learn those skills of self-regulation and problem solving by having lots of high quality practice of co-regulation with a caring, supporting adult, and lots of practice of regulating and problem solving with a caring and supporting adult. So not only is sending somebody for isolation and time out not likely to be helpful, it's also going to add more failure, more shame, more barriers to actually behavior. So I think you're absolutely right in terms of how we understand that behavior. And for me, I would like to reframe being naughty or as a kind of dysregulation. So all of us, just to jump in with a number of things, and you can come back and ask me questions about any of these.
No, it's fine.
So, we all have a window of tolerance. We all have a kind of zone within which we are regulated. And when we're in that zone of tolerance, that window of tolerance, we're able to use all of that wonderful human capacity to problem solve and socialize and empathize, whatever age we are, big human beings, small human beings. However, when we're pushed outside of that zone of regulation, that's a window of tolerance, then all of those capacities are no longer available to us. So if we are interacting with a child or young person and they are dysregulated, and we're then adding extra demands on them to help them to, to expect them to self-regulate, or to expect them to problem solve, or to repair a rupture in a relationship, and those parts of the brain that are required simply are not working for them until we get them regulated and back within their window of tolerance, back to a calm state, which we can talk about ways to do that in a minute if you like.
That's right.
Until we do that regulation piece first, we are not going to be able to support and help that person to make the behavior choices that we want them to make. So,
Absolutely.
sending somebody somewhere when they're dysregulated to somehow what regulate themselves, manage themselves, problem solve, make it better.
Feel
Not
worse.
that many children will have that ability to do that until we
Absolutely.
have taught it to them through repeated experiences of
It's
co-regulation and
fabulous.
problem solving with us, really.
I'm going to come back to co-regulation and then work our way back to regulation.
Beautiful, thank you.
But we're bouncing off each other here, which is lovely.
Thanks, Ellie.
It reminded me of when I was working in Vancouver Island with a wonderful woman called Kristen Veens. And some of you may not be familiar, no, may not be aware that you're familiar with her work, but she does fabulous little graphics that come up on Twitter, on Facebook, and Instagram. Very often, if you see a fabulous little graphic, it'll say at Chris Veens on it. And Kristen Veens with a K, Kristin, Veens is Wiens. Kristen, I do hope you don't mind me sharing your fabulous work. She has been very, probably well deserved, but also privileged to work with Stuart Shanker, who does an awful lot of the self-regulation work. And one of the things I learned from Kristin is, do we need to make them feel worse to help them behave better? Now, I'm going to say that again in case any parents or people listening are frantically scribbling it down. Do we need to make them feel worse to help them to behave better? And that links into what you said about shame. And shame seemed to be an okay thing. When I was at school, it was all right to make somebody feel ashamed. They might learn a lesson from it. But actually, every interaction with a child is an opportunity to learn for them and for us. And that's mine. I'm going to own that one on a t-shirt. Every interaction with a child is an opportunity to learn for them and for us. Now, what they learn might be, oh my goodness, I don't feel safe with this adult. I will avoid them, or I will do things to help me not to be in this situation. But that takes me on to something that you mentioned, and I think you and I are really familiar with this term. But when I first started to study self-regulation, co-regulation was like rocket science, because we say we need regulation, and then these children, I'm wagging my finger here, need some self-regulation. And certainly our early years curriculum doesn't necessarily help us in this because it prescribes self-regulation in all sorts of forms. If you're in early years and you're listening to this, do go back and have a look at what it says about self-regulation and also in the PSHE section of that as well. But co-regulation to me was like, oh my goodness, of course we need this. But Ian, help us out. For anybody who's not so familiar with that term, what might co-regulation look like? Perhaps with a little one, a tweenie, somebody year five, year six, and then maybe somebody who's 14 chronologically or even older and behaving like they're 14.
Beautiful questions, thank you. Can I just answer that with a slightly kind of tangential thing, and then come back to that
He's
exact
going
point?
off
But
at a
so the slightly
tangent.
tangential point is that
Fabulous.
we have a really important misunderstanding that I think I just wanted to kind of get on my soapbox here for a minute about co-regulation and self-regulation. We somehow think, we all need to meet this magical self-regulation kind of ability, and we should, children get to a certain age and they should somehow be able to self-regulate, and that should be so. We know when we look at the psychology and the neuroscience, the only way that human beings learn to self-regulate is through lots of experiences of co-regulation. So when we as adults are taking the time with a dysregulated, child that's highly anxious or highly angry, and we're taking the time to, which I'll talk about in a minute, how we can co-regulate them and help them to be back in a calm, regulated state. Every time we do that, not only are we teaching them that we're a safe adult, we have that, but also we're giving a little lesson in how to regulate. And it's lots of repeated experiences of co-regulation that actually lead people to learn to self-regulate. So all of those times that we are supporting a child or young person, or maybe even an adult, to be able to calm and regulate with us, we are supporting them to gradually learn. So I think the bit I'm trying to say there is co-regulation, first of all, is as a vehicle for us to help teach people to learn to self-regulate. And now we want to do this in two ways. We want to both co-regulate with people when they are dysregulated. When somebody is anxious or angry, we want to be with them to help them de-escalate and co-regulate and become calm again. And I'll talk about some strategies for that in a minute for those different age groups. But also, we want to practice this at times when we are being proactive. When somebody is, if we're teaching this to a child or young person, we don't want to wait till they're drowning to teach them to learn to swim, right? We
I
want to
love that image.
practice, and we want to practice things at the time proactively, don't we? So there are a number of resources that we can use, and I'll talk to you some of those in a minute, that we can use that we can help children and people to experiment and try and find out different ways of becoming calm, becoming regulated, and that they can do those with us. And then they can say, oh, that box breathing approach that I learned from Ali, or that kind of 4-6 breathing approach, or that rhythmical movement approach, or that, these are the things, or that beautiful piece of work Jules was sharing with us earlier about what's something that she did with her grandchild, ways that they have learned that these are the things that work for me to be able to calm, to be able to regulate myself. And then ideally, they can use them proactively themselves as a self-regulation over time, but also they can use them when things are stressful, right? When we've got something difficult and challenging, we can turn to our go-to regulating activities. Now, again, without throwing, I hope this isn't too much information all at once, but there are basically, it breaks down to three different groups of practices that help all human beings to regulate. So whether we are doing this with somebody, and that's what co-regulation effectively means, one person doing regulation alongside and with somebody else, so we're doing it together, or whether we are taking away this approach and using it ourselves individually for self-regulation. There's this breathing approaches. There are a thing that I called earlier, Ali's somatosensory approaches, which is a psychology term for kind of grounding, rhythmical movement. And again, I'll do that in a minute. And then third is the kind of being kind of in a co-regulation, just being with somebody. Just we have this thing called mirror neurons that basically we pick up, and we are contagious to the emotions and physiology of the other people around us. So if we are spending time with somebody that we feel safe with, that we trust, like Jules, what with her grandson, he's spending time when he's a bit regulated with Jules as his caring, supportive grandmother that he has a caring, supportive, trusted relationship with, and even just the presence of being with that person is going to be
Stunning.
calming. So co-regulation,
I'm just going to
yeah,
press pause for a
please
moment
do,
for
yeah.
those people listening in. Jules is my fabulous PA, who is also a fabulous grandmother to children with several neurodiversities. And while I was off getting a glass of water, she was sharing with Ian before we got on air how she had done some particular co-regulation activities with her grandson. And it's lovely because not only do people like Ian and myself, who work in education, work with education, have expertise, but it's really important to know that people who work hands-on with their own children or with their grandchildren, or in all sorts of different contexts, have huge expertise as well. And we always need to listen to those people who are at the chalk face, who know what it's like on a day-to-day basis. So apologies for interrupting again, Ian. We were doing your
Ali,
breathing.
please don't apologise. That was a beautiful interjection. Thank you for that. Please do keep interjecting. So yeah, those three things, the breathing, the somatosensory rhythmical, and the, shall I take those one at a time and talk about
Yes,
them?
please
Different people
do.
have it. So I always like to talk about breathing. So a physiological hack that we can all use, big human beings, small human beings, to bring ourselves to calm, to regulate ourselves, to get ourselves back into our window of tolerance is breathing approaches and breathing techniques. We can't change most of our physiology kind of consciously, but we can change our breathing. By changing our breathing, we can change the neurotransmitter balance in our brains very quickly. We can also change the hormones and the physiology of what's going on in our bodies. So if people don't mind just having a go at it with me now, if that's all right, Ali. So
You're not
if
going to send me to sleep, are you,
I'm,
Ian?
I promise you, if I do, I'll wake you up again. That's a useful point, though. Actually, it is a really nice thing we can use to get ourselves calm and sleepy
Absolutely.
if we're finding it hard to sleep. But effectively, if we want to calm ourselves down, taking a deep breath and then having an extended exhale, so the exhale is longer than the inhale. So a deep breath and extend, it often gets called 4-6 breathing or 7-11 breathing. The exact count doesn't matter, but we take a nice deep breath. I can see Ali doing that with me now. So we're expanding our chest and our diaphragm, and then we're just extending our exhale nice and gently and slowly, and we're breathing out. And if you just do this with me for about 30 seconds and then check in with your body, you will feel softer, calmer, gentler. It's an incredibly powerful thing to learn. So again, just breathing in for a count of approximately 4, but the exact count doesn't matter. Nice deep breath in. And then we are extending that gentle exhale, going out as we go forward. If you don't mind just keeping doing that, those people that are listening to this and Ali as well, and just going forward, so that exhale and extended, that longer exhale. What we're doing, the psychology of this, is we are stimulating our vagal nerve. You may well have come across vagal nerve. It's in a lot of kind of knowledge and out there now in the kind of press, etc. So effectively what we're doing is we're sending calming messages from our lungs up our vagal nerve to parts of the brain called the locus coeruleus and the kind of basically the emotional parts of the brain. And we're changing the brain chemistry and stimulating a thing called our parasympathetic nervous system, which is the thing that calms us down. We release all sorts of calming hormones, and even that 30 seconds you've just done it for there, it will be calming. We can do it subtly. People don't even need to notice we're doing it. The other impact, if we are feeling a lack of energy, if we've gone into a more hypo-aroused state rather than that hyper-alert, kind of anxious, angry state, rather than calming, if we want to energize ourselves, if we take a deep in-breath and then a short forced exhale, so a deep in-breath, expanding, and then a short forced exhale and the deep in breath and a short, even if we do that for 30 seconds or so with that shorter exhale, that stimulates the sympathetic nervous system rather than the parasympathetic nervous system. And that gets some adrenaline, noradrenaline starting to flow in the body, and it wakes us up. So we can check in with ourselves. We can teach this to children and young people. We can use different approaches. They can have a go at trying different things. There's also box breathing where you breathe in for the count of 4, you pause for the count of 4, you breathe out for the count of 4, you pause for the count of 4. People can try different things, see what works for them. But then we've got strategies that we can co-regulate together. We can
Fabulous.
use to then people can self-regulate when they need to calm. So, these are wonderful things we can
And
teach
if we
every
can
human
think
being.
of sort of three different ages of children
Yes,
for this,
yes.
I can remember several situations because I'm the proud parent of three neurodiverse young men now,
Oh,
and the
fantastic.
fact that they have made it to be young men is no mean feat. And I do remember that when they were little, one of them in particular, we did your breathing, but we didn't call it the counting. We did blowing the candles out.
Beautiful. Yep.
And so I would hold up my fingers, and then after a while, they would hold up their fingers and just blow. And I actually saw a young teacher doing that with a little 4-year-old the other day. Now, I don't think your 14-year-old is when they're effing and jeffing, and you say,
Yeah.
come over here, dear, and blow out my candles. They might tell you where to stick your candles. But the
However, I mean, I also in a previous life I've worked with kind of 16, 17, 18-year-old gang members and families, etc.
Oh, wow,
They will
fascinating.
still learn this stuff, right? For example, that box breathing, the breathing
Box,
in,
they would.
holding kind of, that kind of square breathing or box breathing, that's used by the special forces to kind of get themselves ready for battle situations where they are calm but focused. You can teach that to young people. Once people experience, and once they
That's
see idiots
fascinating.
like me doing things like jumping around, doing Qigong and yoga and doing some breathing alongside it, and they do that with us, it's incredible. If you've got that relationship with somebody and you do it in a way that isn't patronizing,
Absolutely.
it's incredible. And
Now,
one of the other things I use, I'm aware we're not on video today, but squishies, teaching
yes.
them where you squish a squishy and then you while you breathe in and you breathe out while that squishy expands. I mean, my 15, 16, 17, 18-year-old gang members used to, and my staff members and parents that used to come into my office used to often love borrowing a squishy, and just we would both sit there with squishies and squeeze as we breathed in, and then that extended exhale. But it's that extended exhale that is the stuff that is calming. So breathing in. So it's people will find their own way of making the magic work.
That's
But you're
fabulous.
right, there's different approaches we can use for older and younger people.
I'm going to press pause again. I do that quite a lot. One of the things that I like to share through these particular workshops, these Talking Together Tuesdays, is that with my five-finger thinking, my fingertips approach, If you imagine you hold up your hand in front of your face, and the fourth finger, it doesn't matter, it's not connected with being married, but actually the fourth finger is known as the ring finger. And I'm twiddling a simple ring on my finger as we speak. And the strategy that goes with that fourth finger is, what have you practiced that helps you? Repetition of the right thing. Now, knowing, helping that young person, whether they're 4, 8, 12, 14, 24, 48, as you say, big people, small people, if you know what helps you, that's repetition of the right thing. And when we are looking at a child who is struggling with their behaviour, whose behaviours are difficult for them and perhaps for those people around them, if we use our relationship, and I love that you mentioned the relationship, because absolutely having that connection, a woman who was a fabulous foster parent said to me, there's no correction without connection. And that connection, and I use my two hands together, I use my hands as the gesture for this a lot. That connection is really, really important. So making sure that, well, I say making sure, it isn't always easy, but taking time to have a positive relationship, to be playful. And you can probably tell me which psychologist it is. It's a very famous psychologist that does PACE,
That's Dan Hughes.
Dan Hughes. And the first in this acronym of PACE is playful. And I heard Dan Hughes speak at the Centre for Child Mental Health a number of years back. And just hearing that the first thing that he did when he was trying to connect with very troubled young people, and I'm in awe that you've worked with gang members, having written a book on boys, I'm fascinated to know more about that, perhaps in a future conversation. But my message from that is the repetition of the right thing, which is the fourth finger, and then the relationship. And the thumb up is the first of the gestures. And one of the things that I do when I'm talking to parents of children who have got some difficult behaviours, perhaps special needs, perhaps ACEs, so adverse childhood experiences, is what are they particularly proud of? And just to find something that helps you to connect with them. And a young person I'm working with, the thing that they connect through is astronomy. And I was working with them the other night, and well, it's a fabulous night for astronomy tonight. Apparently, all of the planets are aligned, let alone the stars. And as part of our time together, we went outside and we looked at the rings on Saturn through their telescope. And somebody might say, oh my goodness, Ali, you're paid to do X, Y, Z with that child. What are you doing spending time looking through a telescope? Well, actually, we got so much really strong work done together in that session because we knew from the start that we were going to go and look at these beautiful planets. So I'm
Absolutely,
aware
Ali. There's
we
so
are
much,
only on breathing.
in there. Can I just quickly touch on the pace bit that you've mentioned
Yes.
and those touch points? So those touch points to build relationships, are finding out what the young person is interested in, what their strengths are, what they like. In your case, astronomy, you mentioned, and starting where they're at is beautiful, isn't it? That kind of follow, lead,
Yeah.
follow type of way of building a safe, interesting relationship. That's beautiful. Pace, we've not talked about pace before, but I'm so delighted you've mentioned it. Pace is one of the things that is an absolute, I push this everywhere and I try and get it. So on my website, which I think Jules has taken the reference to, so the South
Would you like to just
Central.
say it out loud as
Yeah,
well?
of course I can. So it's that if you Google, although other user
Yes.
drivability, but if you basically search for South Central Teaching School Hub, so South Central Teaching School Hub, it's actually www.southcentraltsh.com, but if you Google South Central Teaching School Hub and go to the additional CPD page, there's a whole load of things there. One thing that is there, it's called an introduction to PACE approach, and it's me talking for an hour and 10 minutes introducing all things about PACE. So it's about playfulness, acceptance, curiosity, empathy, things we have not got time to go into today. But if you want to build a trusting and safe relationship with a child or young person of any age, frankly, with a human being of any age, pace is magical. The playfulness, that fun is where it starts.
Yeah.
Thinking about the non-verbal communication, starting with a young person is that accepting and being curious, and then most important of all, the empathy. So I'm sorry I haven't got time to go into that in much more detail today, but it's all there on the website. So please
Maybe
do
we
go
can
and
do
grab that
another one in
entirely
a
free.
little while, Ian.
Love to do that, Ali, another time. And you're right, we've only got as far as breathing, haven't we? Which I'm glad we've
Yeah.
got to, because that's the one that is something that I would often start with and get
And
people to
everybody
do
can do
practicing, because
that.
everyone can do it. And you can do it. When I get stressed on the tube in London, I can do my breathing to calm myself, regulate myself. People don't even need to know that you're doing it. That just that consciously slowing your breathing and extended exhale, magical stuff. The second group was this fancy psychology term called somatosensory. And all that really means is rhythmical movement, especially sensory rhythmical movement. So, things like yoga that we do, things like qigong that I do, which is a kind of Chinese form of type of yoga type stuff, things where we might, naturally rock a younger child, we might go for a walk, we might do... Now, there is a caveat on this, however, right? If we want to calm ourselves or calm somebody else, that rhythmical physical movement needs to be slow and heavy. If we want to energize ourselves or somebody else, that rhythmical physical movement needs to be faster and lighter paced. So if we're trying to calm somebody down and we jump around and we put some lively music on and we dance and we shake things around, that's only going to get them even more energized, right? Which we might want to do, but that is going to energize somebody. If, however, we want to do, doing a plank, doing a push against a wall, going for a walk, those slower, heavier things, carrying somewhere, something somewhere, they are going to be the things that are going to regulate us. And we can do that in co-regulation too. So getting people to do some slower and heavy movement with us is a really beautiful way of getting back into that window of tolerance, getting back into that regulation.
Wow.
The
And
breathing and rhythmical movement are two really key
I'd
things.
like to add in an example there. You get to a certain point in your career and you think, I never think I know it all. I never have. I know there's always more to learn. But when you learn something that you hadn't even considered and it just changes your practice, that happened to me last year. I'm a very privileged person because I have colleagues in lots of different countries around the world, as I guess you probably do as well. The world is so much smaller since Zoom and the benefits of COVID. I have a wonderful colleague called Debbie Laurin, Laurin, in Canada. And I was able to go and stay with her, and she took me on a tour of Waldorf and Steiner schools in Canada. And they're very gentle and they're very co-regulation. They build around the environment. Energy and environment are two things that impact on behavior. And that's part of the roots within my fingertips. And those are in the fingertips ebook and the fingertips book, which you'd be able to access on my website, which is alimcleugh.co.uk. But what I learnt, among many other things, with Debbie, is that when the children are bubbling and you're wanting to bring them back, I am a musician at heart, and I didn't actually get that this rhythm thing was so, I knew it in my heart. And I always sang with the children. When I came back from spending time with Debbie, instead of doing my lively, bubbly stripe, stripe, dot, 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 stripe, and all of this, I came into the classroom and I just sat calmly and I started to sing a good Canadian song, Land of the Silver Birch, Home of the Beaver. It's gentle. The tone of it is really gentle, and the children just melted. I have issues about carpets in classrooms that I could go into for hours, but they just came to the carpet and they became almost different creatures because of that energy which was coming from me, and I am a lively, bubbly. All systems go person. But I learned a really strong skill from that.
Ali, that's beautiful. That's a beautiful example of co-regulation, right? They are picking up on your physiological state of being calm and regulated within your window of tolerance. They feel safe with you, and you are doing that co-regulation, because that was the third thing that you've naturally brought us to. So breathing,
Which
rhythmical somatic
segues.
sensory, and then the physical presence of being in a calm person that they have a
Yes.
trusting relationship with. So you've calmed yourself down by singing. That's a nice extended exhale. You've stimulated your parasympathetic nervous system.
Yeah.
You've got yourself in a beautiful calm state, and then people are feeling calm around you. So again, another really important message is, this stuff that we're talking about in terms of self-regulation, those three different groups of breathing, somatosensory, and also being in physical presence of somebody else that's calm, that we trust, they are just as important for adults too, right? We need to look after ourselves. A beautiful phrase from Bruce Perry is that, a dysregulated person can never calm and regulate anybody. We need
Yeah.
to get ourselves, as you've just described, in that beautiful calm state within our own window of tolerance first, and then we can stress regulate and support other people.
Yeah.
Louise Bomber, one of my heroes, would talk about, rather than being behavior managers, us all as adults trying to be stress regulators, managing our own stress and our own regulation, so we can then support other people through co-regulation to manage and support. And it's when we've got somebody regulated that we can then do that reflective piece of work where we can get them to problem solve and practice and think about, and then learn those skills. But until they're regulated, none of those capacities are available to us. And where things go badly wrong for children, young people, and for adults is when somebody is dysregulated and we're putting
Absolutely.
demands on them that they're just not able to do, because the parts of the brain that are required are simply offline and not available until they're back in that regulated state. So I'm really glad that you focus quite significantly on co-regulation and
Brilliant.
self-regulation, because
And
that regulation piece is so significant for
it really
everything that we do
is.
next.
And so powerful. And it brings us back to our title,
Yes.
which is Time Out or Time In.
Yes.
And I just want to put myself in the place of that particular parent who's having to work really hard because everything's expensive, who's perhaps working longer hours than they would choose to at this time. They may be feeling a little bit stressed because they've had to put their child into after school club and they didn't really want to go. They get home. Then do you do a nutritious meal or do you do a gentle bath time or do you do homework or do you do story or do you what do you do? And I would like to give to all of the parents and people who are in that position listening the license to believe in yourselves and to know that you will very likely be doing so many things which are really good repetition of the right thing for your children. So if you are beating yourself up saying, oh my goodness, I don't even think of doing that when I'm exploding because the little what's-it hasn't put the Lego away or because the teenager has, drunk everything in the fridge again or whatever it may be, and our response is to explode, we actually need to be kind to ourselves. And we need to be kind to ourselves in order to be kind to our children. It brings me back to a lovely guy who sadly is no longer with us. And at the very start of my career in parenting and education, I was part of setting up the Parenting Education Support Forum across Surrey when parenting was something that people were sent to do because they had been terrible. And this fabulous guy, whose name I will try to remember, he was called Dave, and I can't, Springett, I think it was, but he's no longer with us, but his work lives on. And he said that when he has to go to a really dysregulated family whose child, often a boy, has been sent to an educational establishment or a different kind of institution because they've done something really antisocial, probably illegal, the four words that he gives to those parents are calm, kind, considerate, and communicator. And that took me back. I'm so grateful to so many people who have taught me so many things on my journey, and then they come back to the fore when you need them. Calm, kind, considerate, and communicator. And that takes me back to my fourth finger, because repetition of the right thing is for us as parents as well, us as educators, stressed teachers. And Ian, I'm sure you know this with your trainees, that it's a really tough job to juggle everything and to do all of that and keep your paddling under the surface and be calm on top of the water. It's quite something. So I would like to say, be kind to yourselves as well as be kind to your children. What would you like to leave us with, Ian?
Well, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity, first of all, and thank you for those that have listened. I hope there are things that people can take away. I think my two takeaways really that I'd like to keep ringing in people's ears is as we've talked about significantly, that idea of regulation, it very much starts there. You know, if we can get ourselves regulated within our window of tolerance, and we can get ourselves into that regulated state through those different approaches of breathing, rhythmical movement, and also time with people where we're feeling, you know, calm or together, that they're wonderful things that we can do ourselves to then be able to also give that gift of co-regulation to others as well. So regulation for us, as you rightly say, and therefore being able to give that regulation gift and practicing that proactively as well as using it responsibly and reactively when we need it. So that I'm voting for time in if people haven't picked that up, rather than time out. So if somebody is dysregulated, coming to us as a caring, supportive adult to have time in to co-regulate with us. And then once somebody's regulated, we can go into the exploring, problem solving, empathizing, helping people think of solutions, practicing skills, all of that fantastic stuff that you've been starting to touch on there as well. So that was my first one, is regulation, regulation, regulation. And then the second one that we only touched on briefly at the start, but I'd like to come back to, is that idea of really understanding the need behind the behaviour. So the remembering that behaviour is communication, and once we have got everybody regulated, and afterwards when we're reflecting, think about, okay, what is the need that that behaviour is communicating to us? You know, the feelings might be something we can pick up on, and helping people understand the feelings. But feelings really is that kind of manifestation of need. So when we've got unmet need, we will have uncomfortable feelings, and when we've got met needs, we will have comfortable feelings. So if somebody is presenting in some challenging behaviour, and they're likely underneath that to have some unmet needs, that often goes back to that Maslow stuff of basic physiological needs, which we need to really think about with children and young people too. You know, have they had enough sleep? Have they eaten enough? You know, those things make a huge difference to that behavior.
Absolutely.
And then we're into safety. Do they feel safe? If they're trying to control us, and that probably means they don't feel safe. So let's help them feel safer and learn ways of being safe. Belonging, you know, are they struggling to actually be in a relationship with a peer or with an adult, etc.? Is that where the need is, or is it around esteem and confidence and not looking like an idiot, really? So, you know, if we can work out what the need behind the behavior is, we can then put things in place to meet that need, but we can also support and scaffold the child, young person, to learn those skills over time. So it is regulation. Regulation is my number one, and then number two message would be, when we get some time to reflect, working out what the needs are behind that behavior, the unmet needs if it's challenging behavior, and then thinking of what can we put in place to better meet that need and to help the child or young person to be able to meet that need in the longer term and learn the skills to meet that need. That was a lot of things. I hope that was, I got away with that being two, did I just
You
about?
did, you did, and you can certainly get away with it because you're the unmet needs beneath the behaviour.
Yes.
I'm going to hold it up to show to Ian, but for you who are listening, I have got a picture of soil with roots in it, and the roots beneath the surface are the things that can help us to analyze a little bit what are the struggles beneath the surface and the solutions. I'm not going to share them all with you because it would be impossible to remember them all, but energy and environment is one of them, and that's what's part of what's in the soil. So the energy of people around, and Ian was saying about the basic Maslow needs and talking about food and sleep. Well, physical and sensory needs are something that any parent who's got a child with special educational needs will be familiar. But one of our physical and sensory needs are, have you had enough to eat? Have you had enough sleep? And I do a big thing about pushing protein. I'm not a drug pusher, I'm a protein pusher. And just checking whether our children have had enough protein. And in the school, little school I'm very privileged to work in, we have a certain waxed type of cheese on tap. And children will say, can I go to the fridge and get one of these cheeses? And absolutely. Because it's a very long day if you're living on puffed cereals to keep you going until lunchtime. And on that note, Ian and I are recording this in the evening. I don't know whether you've had your fuel before we've started, but I can hear that my husband is doing a great job of preparing mine in the kitchen. So those deep-seated needs are absolutely huge and important. What's beneath the surface? Our title was Time Out or Time In. So if you have got a child that's struggling, when they deserve your love the least, they need it the most. I'm going to say that again. That's from a very unsettling book by Lionel Shriver. But I liked the phrase, when they deserve your love the least, they need it the most. And as a parent who has had some very bumpy times with raising her children, and I'm sure there are more to come because it never stops. When they are driving me absolutely nuts, and I really want to scream and it always brings me up short to think that they feel safe and comfortable around us, and maybe they've held it together all day, and they can actually let go with us. They may be kicking out at who is closest. So, do we give them time out? Maybe give them a safe space they can choose to go to. But if they are accepting of your company, just be in a space, just be alongside, breathe, do all of these rhythmical things. And hopefully, if you have been practicing this, gradually be patient. That time in will be paying in just a much improved relationship. So, opportunities for learning together, sorry, talking together, learning together, and growing together with your children. Thank you so much for joining me, Ian, and thank you so much for joining us, all of our lovely listeners. I'm Ali McClure. I wish you all the very best for some fabulous time in with your children.
Thank you very much.